Have you ever thought about what it actually costs an introvert to show up every day, fully, in a place that was never designed for them? Think about teachers. 6 hours a day in a classroom, back-to-back meetings, lunch with students, parent emails at 10 p.m. For a lot of introverted educators and leaders in general, that's not just exhausting. That's a slow drain on everything that makes you good at what you do. Welcome to The Introverted Leader. It's a podcast helping introverted leaders embrace your underrated quiet strengths so you can get promoted and start earning what you deserve. I'm Greg Weinger. I have over 25 years of leadership experience, and yes, I am an introvert. My guest today is Heidi Kasevich. She's a leadership educator, executive coach, and an author who's spent over 25 years working in and with schools. She was also director of education for a hero of mine, Susan Cain, at her Quiet Revolution organization. There, Heidi built a national professional development program. It was featured in NPR, The Huffington Post, Harvard Magazine, among others. She knows this world from the inside out. Here's why this conversation matters for you. The dynamics Heidi describes of overstimulation, the bias toward louder voices, the way meetings and cultures are just inherently designed for extroverts. That's not just a school problem. That's our problem too. In this episode, you'll learn, number one, how to recognize and lead from your genuine introvert strengths and stop performing extroversion. Number two, how to use Heidi's strength, stretch, and restore framework to grow beyond your comfort zone. And number three, one practical step you can take today to protect your energy and show up as your best self. All right, let's get into it. So, Heidi, glad to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you, Greg. I am thrilled to be here. I've really enjoyed listening to your podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. Could you share for the audience, are you introvert or extrovert?
Oh boy, yes, I'm very high on the introverted scale. I'd love to give you a couple of sort of negative and positive experiences from my past. The more negative are like the stories of family lore. Like Heidi was such a highly reactive baby that we couldn't take her anywhere. You know, I screamed or I thrashed my legs or I made a lot of noise in environments that were overstimulating. And that actually became part of my psyche. And then fast forward to middle and high school, when you're meant to, you know, speak up and speak out loudly, I was often told, Heidi, just come out of your shell. Heidi, you're so shy. And as Susan Cain mentions in Quiet, talkative people are considered to be actually smarter, better looking, and more desirable as friends. And this definitely impacted me. And I always want to put a spotlight on the positive too. Mm-hmm. So as an educator, we think about how we can reach any child, right? On a one-on-one basis, how we can make that impact. I had a seventh grade science teacher who signed my green autograph book with the following words, HK, you've got a lot to give. Like, reach out. And I'll never forget that. This is the impact that educators can have. I made a great choice to go to Haverford College. It was small. It was completely introvert friendly. I was able to focus in on my twin passions of French and gymnastics. And it wasn't at all like nerdy or geeky to spend a lot of time in the library, have a few friends, and I believe that the Quaker values of consensus and silence in that culture really helped me to thrive and set the basis for what I could become as an educator.
That's great that you found a quiet refuge that was really supportive.
It was from there that I think I really learned that my introversion, you know, wasn't a barrier, but a strength that could help me as a leadership educator. You know, I walk into the classroom and it still happens today. You know, I teach with like high energy and enthusiasm and no one has any idea that I fall on the very introverted side of the introvert extrovert spectrum. When I was first serving as a department chair at an independent school in New York City. And I remember that what I was doing was kind of creating this, subtly, this energy amongst the faculty whereby they felt that they could share. And I didn't have a name for it at the time, because honestly, I didn't really have a name for my introversion until Susan Cain's book, mm-hmm. Quiet, came out in 2012. But I can see in retrospect that what I was doing was creating a safe environment by listening so people could feel empowered. I was not taking the spotlight, but that's what I was doing. And that's how I continued to lead in that school and moving forward. So I like to call that kind of setting the stage to actualize the potential of others, which is how I would define leadership.
I love that. Was there ever a barrier to that, like a hump you had to get over? Or was there initial nervousness, or were you just drawn and passionate about being up in front and sharing this knowledge?
That's a great question. I think for me, it's a combination. So when I was very young, my father installed a large green chalkboard in the basement. And I used to go downstairs. This is my imaginary play. And I used to teach to imaginary classes. My father is an educator himself. And so I had that role model, but I was drawn to it. It was just, it seemed natural. And all this imaginary practice, I was honestly terrified. I used to prepare, as all good introverts do, prepare mm-hmm. and plan. And I had the energy at that time to stay up literally till about 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. planning my French classes so that they were engaging and interesting. And of course, I had the unfortunate job of teaching at the 8 a.m. college class as a very young person myself. I do remember at the end of that year, this particular class threw a birthday party for me in the month of April, completely by surprise, of course, but I'll never forget walking in, and I just got this reception that was so positive. When I had been, questioning how I'd been teaching, but there was a great moment of connection there.
Yeah. So it sounds like it was a confidence building experience. Really great themes here. How do you deal as an introvert with these challenging situations? Preparation, it's our natural strength. Making connections with people, creating space, making people feel valued, sort of stepping back, reflecting the spotlight back on other folks, leaning into your introvert strengths.
Yeah, for sure. I know this is one of the greatest strengths of introverted leaders, and they do what I think actually can come quite naturally to introverted leaders. They're open to feedback. They ask questions. They're interested in diverse perspectives. And they do want to do what I said earlier, actualize the potential of others. Mission purpose focused. I can tell a little story about a middle school principal that I know well, who is introverted and was practicing her strength of humility. When she came in, her school district had low test scores. And instead of having a top-heavy approach, saying, okay, faculty, this is what we need. She had a very different mentality and mindset. It was more as though she said, colleagues, let's solve this together. And she was new, and that was a great move. And faculty together decided that they wanted to emphasize social-emotional learning so that faculty could connect more effectively and robustly with students. And that's what they focused on for the year, not drills or getting higher grades. And Greg, I think you know where I'm going with this. Guess what happened? It worked. Test scores rose. She says, quote, Liz, if you go in thinking you can solve everything yourself, you're going to fail. But if you go in with the mentality of, I'm going to ask questions, I'm going to ask for help, you build psychological safety on my teams, and you have a much better chance of succeeding.
Yeah, it's a great story. I want to focus a little bit on what it's like for teachers and educators in the classroom. And particularly, I think you said something like 70% of teachers are actually introverts. And then you just contrast that with the open classroom, chaotic environments, huge numbers of students. Like, what do you see out there? What is it like for educators today?
Well, I can start with a statistic. 41% of teachers leave the profession within 5 years of entering it. And that's associated with an emphasis on constant social interaction. So, in a typical K through 12 school, what's screamed out to someone like me, who's an educator, educational leader, and a consultant at this point for schools, is overstimulation. So you have in a typical school day, you've got high noise levels, got open office teacher lounges, there's very little restorative quiet, the expectation to plan, to socialize in an open environment, and have other duties, like you have to have lunch with your students and socialize. Then there are, of course, meetings after school. It depends on each school environment for sure, but there are meetings. Now there are even more expectations in the evenings for communication with colleagues and parents and even students via email. So in a way, your school day just keeps getting longer and longer. And there's the quotation I really want to share, Greg. We might know it. It comes from Florence Nightingale and it involves the word noise. So back in 1859, Florence Nightingale said, "Unnecessary noise is the most cruel absence of care that can be inflicted on the sick or the well." And noise, comes from that Latin root, actually meaning queasiness or pain. And so that's what I see. And I've heard even, students and faculty say when there's so much going on and, even the school and like the physical school classroom environment, there's a lot of things on the walls and things are happening. Well, I've heard faculty and students say, "The walls are screaming at me." So it's a stimulation overload, right? That's both sensory and social. And of course, it's our introverts who need to dial back on that sort of stimulation.
Absolutely. And so you're really describing kind of a hellish environment for someone who is very introverted. And I think this is similar to a lot of people who are in workplaces in general, in a corporate work setting. You don't necessarily have a lot of control over that environment. So, what do you advise your people who you work with or educators to do in those circumstances?
Oh, well, there's a lot. There's a lot that can be done. And this is a key part of my work as a consultant with schools. So we can work to create quiet times within the calendar, within the school day. How do you build in moments of, and Greg, this sounds so simple, but even moments of passing time. I'll be honest, I used to work at a school where one class ended at 9 and the next class started at 9. Schools have moved away from that model, but even to add, 5 or the luxury of sort of 10 minutes of passing time for students can really help. I've worked with many schools on building in what they call the quiet 10, which is again that sort of that 10 minutes, but this is for faculty members and indicating, even if it's in an open office situation, that I am unavailable right now, not because I'm unfriendly or not doing my job, but because I'm actually being a professional energy manager as an introvert. I can show up, in a much more productive way if I have, you know, the simple recharging time. And I've also worked with schools who set up like corners of the faculty space that are quiet recharge spaces, or even somehow manage to get one little empty room. And that's a place where faculty can go in. There are no expectations for socializing. You know, it's a calm kind of low light environment. There might be music playing, like blue music. You can go in and meditate, but it's just, it's a place to recharge and restore in the midst of that, what is going to probably always be a rather chaotic school day. But, you know, I think it's, you know, kind of getting that mindfulness around the needs of, you know, a third to our, a half of our faculty. And as you mentioned, by more faculty are more introverted, and then our students as well.
Yeah. Building in that quiet time for students. I just recall my own experiences in K through 12. And these are long, really very, very long days. And like you said, the walls screaming at you is a good description about like all the bright colors and, you know, the lights and all of that. How do you come to work with specific schools or districts? Are they seeking this out, or do they have problems that are presenting in different ways?
Oh, it's a great question. I would say I get contacted from a lot of parents. Parents feel as though their students are being overlooked in the school environment. So whether they're part of the school board or the parent council, they want me to know that the school needs to become more introvert friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been kind of the origin, and then it kind of spreads, right? And then the word spreads, you know, to more upper level management. Like, oh, we actually need to take this into account because we want our students to be in an optimal learning environment. And so there are adjustments and tweaks that we need to make in terms of, you know, the way we approach, you know, collaboration, quiet times, quiet spaces, and even our own meetings. Thinking about faculty here, Greg, I have witnessed throughout my career thus far, faculty meetings where a handful of voices, even in the largest of faculties, you know, 150 faculty members, it's the same faculty members who speak up.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, how do you create an environment where you have, you know, where you can hear other faculty voices, particularly when it comes to important decisions. So, you know, that's kind of just another angle, you know, to the kind of work I do. How do you create more inclusive meetings? And I know that you've covered this in other episodes too. I would say those techniques are fantastic and they're important for schools too. I have to say that when I assist in creating a more introvert-friendly culture in a school, I fundamentally believe that we need buy-in from faculty at large. And so my preferred method is to build a task force and work not in a, like a one-off, but, you know, maybe over a year to shift culture around quiet, which will bring in more of a balance between, you know, solitude and group work, collaboration, and alone time. And I have to say, this is the model that I developed for Quiet Revolution when I worked for Susan Cain. We had faculty members that were coming from different aspects of the hierarchy, as well as teachers. And I would say, let's face it, all teachers are leaders. They are leading students. And one of my foundational tenets is that leadership is about action, the influence you have on others, and not necessarily your title or position. So all educators can be involved in this quiet initiative in a school.
Mm-hmm.
And then my work is very school specific in terms of how can we identify where the extrovert leadership ideal is taking root
in our school, in our admissions process? Or how are we writing our comments for our students? Are we saying, John is doing great work, but he needs to speak up in class?
Yeah.
Are we relying on the extrovert idea? In other words, have to be charismatic, a fast talker, quick decision maker, loving the podium. Is that one model of leadership that we are embracing even unwittingly? And this is what's so interesting about my work. It's almost like healing off a layer of, we call it plastic wrap, you know, around the culture so that you can see what's really happening. And then we can create a more inclusive one for our introverts.
It's really important work because I think it starts even earlier than that in the home, but it's such a formative time for students K through 12. And these institutions are biased towards extroversion. Just all those things you just described, the nature of how so much teaching happens, you know, teachers calling on students, that whole environment is favoring extroverted kids. You're just going to have a tendency to call on the same kids. There's always the kids who just really shrink from that and don't want to participate for, you say, 50% of the population of kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would say the more a teacher is, honestly, regardless of temperament, the more a teacher is fatigued by the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
The more likely they are to call on those first hands that go up,
mm-hmm.
right? And those are going to be our extroverts who are going to raise their hands first. They're getting a dopamine rush,
mm-hmm.
right? That's what the research shows biogenetically. Mm-hmm. They're getting a bubbly buzz involving social attention, and they're going to process out loud. And I've seen it so many times, and I'll be honest, Greg, done it myself. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
I'll just go with those. But then you have to catch yourself and you have to say, okay, hands down. Let's all take some time to think. Let's all take a reflective pause.
Mm-hmm.
And then research shows that for, you know, a faculty member and for the students, you have more complex ideas when we have that time to think. Again, for introverts and extroverts alike.
And the more people who experience this, the more people who are going to be better prepared when they move on to their careers and then the workplace.
Yeah, for sure. I'm an advocate of the reflective pause,
mm-hmm.
in meetings and in classrooms, in family discussions around the Thanksgiving table. And I'm also an advocate for the brainwriting approach to creative collaboration. So with brainwriting, we start a group endeavor with a few moments of solitude. Solitude stimulates the default mode network, which will then help us to think divergently about a challenge. We start with silence and then we share. And so we separate idea generation in solitude from idea evaluation, where we start talking. Everyone around the table is using post-it notes. Things can be shared anonymously. And then before you start talking about ideas to evaluate them, to figure out how you want to solve a challenge, you've got everyone's ideas, not just those ideas that are presented first, which also tend to anchor a conversation. And those often in groups tend to come from those who are higher up in the hierarchy. And the research shows from, I believe it's Adam Grant, that in a brainwriting session rather than a brainstorming session, you have productivity goes up by 50% and stress goes down by 74%.
Got it. And we're saying writing because everyone, instead of just verbalizing everything, the introverts are going to naturally shrink in that environment. Enforced quiet, everyone is sitting and writing out their ideas. And yeah, so I hadn't heard the brain writing term. It's a nice counterpoint to brainstorming.
Absolutely. This is an approach I use in coaching quiet leaders. So if we focus on the introvert, introverts need to understand that they're not deficient, that they come to the leadership table with many, many strengths. So I have them fill out what I call a personality preference indicator, and that shows where you fall on the introvert-extrovert spectrum when it comes to social, recharging, working, communication, and decision-making styles. And so they see their preferences, and then one of my mottos is, let's turn your preference into a strength. And so we talk about the leadership strength of building one-on-one relationships. And that is connected with the introvert preference of socializing in that one-on-one environment.
Mm-hmm.
Think about decision-making. So the introvert tends to be more prudent, weighing options before making decisions.
Mm-hmm.
I say more because more than the extrovert, who tends to make decisions more quickly. And that is one of the areas I'm really focused on, because often introverted clients believe that they're incapable of making decisions. And so my work is to help them understand that they have a different decision-making style than extroverts.
Mm-hmm.
That you're going to weigh options, you're going to be actually cautious. And then I often throw out Warren Buffett, a famously prudent introverted investor, who said, my IQ, to quote him loosely, my IQ is not higher than anyone else's. I just have the temperament to control the urges that keep me from making bad decisions in investment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the strength part.
Yeah, I like the framing too of it, the preferences. There can be a lot of shame bound up in the way you are. And expressing that as a preference implies choice. What do you tend to do? What do you prefer to do? Where are you most comfortable?
Yeah, perfect. And then if we move on to, so I have stretch I think of it as a triad, strength, stretch, restore, because they all go together. So I think we can feel, and once we understand our more introverted or extroverted nature, we can feel confined. This is one of the things I worry about in the field that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We want introversion, the label, to set us free.
This message is brought to you by the Capital One Venture X card. Venture X offers the premium benefits you expect, like a $300 annual Capital One travel credit for less than you expect. Elevate your earn with unlimited double miles on every purchase, bringing you one step closer to your next dream destination. Plus, enjoy access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. The Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
And I think understanding that biogenetic nature is only a part of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so here I turn to the brilliant work of Dr. Brian Little from Cambridge University, who talks about our makeup as really tripartite. So we have our biogenetic nature, we have our sociogenetic nature, and we have our idiogenetic nature. So biogenetic is our preferences as introverts or extroverts. That's just obviously one facet of personality. And then sociogenetic is how we act in environments because we need to. If you're following your passion as an educator, if you're in the classroom, or if you're a division head running more meetings, you're going to have to speak up, right? So he talks about free traits that we have in addition to what we all know about introversion and extroversion. We have the ability to act out of character, as he says, in the service of our core personal projects. And to elaborate on his work, he would say your core personal projects should be both meaningful and manageable, and they can be small or large. But we can stretch, hence my term, stretch and step outside of our comfort zones in the name of these core personal projects. And this is how really the way we do it the best. If we have something, a goal we want to attain, I can give you a couple of examples. So an occupational goal, for an educator might be to give a talk at a national conference. Actually, this is how I stretched and how I eventually ended up founding my own company. I just kept giving talks at conferences, networking, getting to know people. But that was not, that was stretching for me. An interpersonal, core personal project could be, well, I'm going to set a goal this week to have coffee with a member of a different department, get to know someone else. An intrapersonal goal could be, okay, I'm going to try and manage my own self-talk, my negative self-talk, before and after parent-teacher conferences. Special shout out to all the introverts in the audience. We know we can ruminate. So that could be with different kind of core personal projects. And then when we're stepping outside of our comfort zones, thinking carefully about what those goals might be, because we don't want to stretch too far. If we stretch too far thinking about a rubber band, that we can snap. It's too much stress, it's too much anxiety. And then the third part of this methodology is we need to plan time to restore, to recharge, particularly after a stretch. I've heard, you know, Greg, a lot of your interviewees talk about even what they're going to do after this podcast interview. I know I'm going to have to recharge. Like, this is very social. This is very on for me. And as we discussed earlier in the educational realm, there's so many social events. So then the question, a key question, is how am I going to restore? How am I going to recharge? And the two questions I really like to ask, Greg, are what gives you energy on the one hand and what saps your energy on the other hand? So you can figure out, do I need to, go out and play pickleball? Do I need to take a walk with my dog? Do I need to watch Netflix? Or maybe if you're more extroverted, you need to go out and go to a coffee shop and talk to somebody. Yeah, we just want to add that the model is designed for introverts and extroverts to just think through that lens. Although I have, in describing it to you, really focused on the introverted leader.
That sounds like it can map to either type of personality. It's so important for people to take care of ourselves. And also what I love about this is it really kind of builds in that notion that you can go beyond where your wiring is today. And we really need to in order to be more fulfilled. It's a really useful framework. Thank you for sharing that. If you could leave introverted leaders out there with some bit of advice, what would it be?
Very simple step would be to create an energy management calendar. So instead of, we often think of time management, think about energy management. And you can do this with your families, with your partner, and you can also do it at work by controlling your meeting schedule, if that's possible.
If you can.
You bet. I really advocate for looking ahead. So we know introverts need that planning and preparation time. And then look at those moments in your calendar. Just even start with the day, start with the week. Then you can move to the month. Where are those moments that are negotiable in my life? I'm thinking right now just of families. How can we advocate as introverts for our needs within our social environments? So we have those negotiable times where we can recharge and restore in ways that are beneficial, ultimately, for everyone. A last little story I'll end with here, Greg, is that after those long days teaching, leading groups in schools, I walked in the door and my kids knew not to talk to me because mom was going to take a bubble bath. And that was it.
Nice.
And then I emerged and I was ready. I was ready for the evening.
That's sound advice right there. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. If people want to learn more about you and your work, where should they go?
So I'm active on LinkedIn, so Heidi Kasevich, and I have my website. I would advocate that people go there. So it's caseleadership.com.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us today and sharing about this area, which I think people don't have a lot of awareness about the struggles that many teachers go through. And thanks for shedding a light on that.
Thank you, Greg. I really enjoyed the conversation and your active listening. I feel it. It's an energetic presence. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you so much. Okay, let's take a moment to recap what we covered today. Number one, introversion is a true advantage, not a problem. Deep listening, careful decision-making, building real one-on-one relationships. These aren't gaps to close. These are strengths that you lead from. Number two, you can stretch yourself. Heidi's framework, Strength, Stretch, and Restore, reminds us that acting outside the comfort zone is absolutely possible for you, and sometimes necessary, especially when it's connected to something that you find personally valuable and meaningful. Just be careful not to stretch so far that you snap. Plan for your recovery. And number three, start thinking in terms of energy management, not just time management. Look at your week. Find the negotiable moments and protect them. That recharge time is not selfish. It's what allows you to show up as your best self for everyone around you. If this episode resonated with you, the best thing you can do now is to subscribe on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, so you don't miss out on what's coming next. I'm Greg Weinger. Keep leading with quiet confidence, and I'll see you next time.